All right, welcome back, SI Boxing Podcast. On this episode, we have an interesting event on Saturday. Mike Tyson is going to face Roy Jones in an exhibition match in California. I'm going to get into that. We've got Daniel Jacobs, Gabriel Rosado. That fight is happening on Friday on DAZN. Jacobs trying to take the next step towards a 168-pound title fight. And Terrence Crawford versus Bob Arum. Some more friction developing there. We'll get into that as well with Dan Rafael, the great boxing writer, formerly of ESPN, now with Boxing Scene and RingTV.com. Stick around for that. Good conversation with Dan. A little bit later on, Daniel Jacobs. He joins me to talk about this grudge match he has with Gabriel Rosado, how he feels at 168 pounds, and what he hopes the future is for him. I think he'll be a sought-after world title challenger if he comes through this fight against Rosado on Friday. So stick around. Daniel Jacobs will join me a little bit later in the show. All that and more on the SI Boxing Podcast.
This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, Dan Rafael is here, longtime boxing writer, now over at BoxingScene.com, Ring TV. You can read him in a lot of different places, Ring Magazine as well. Dan, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure to be on the pod.
Well, Dan, you are on the pod when I'm going to say something that I never expected to say in my podcasting career, and that okay. is, it is Mike Tyson Fight Week. We are into 2020, and it is Mike Tyson Fight Week. On Saturday, Mike Tyson will participate in an exhibition match against Roy Jones Jr., another 50-plus-year-old inactive fighter. This fight will take place in Southern California. There are some strange rules to this fight. It will not officially be scored by the California State Athletic Commission. The referee has been instructed that if it gets a little too out of hand, he's got to step in and make sure it doesn't get too physical. So don't expect a classic scrap between these two guys. Tyson, of course, is 15 years removed from his last professional fight. Did go on kind of a brief exhibition tour himself, including the famous win over Corey Sanders in 2006.
Only one fight. There was only one exhibition fight.
I will call it the short-lived tour then. Roy Jones, however, is about 3 years removed from his last official fight in boxing, a win over the great Scott Sigmund, which punctuated Roy's illustrious career. So I guess we'll start here, Dan. Are you excited about Tyson Jones?
I have to be honest. I'm a little interested. I'm sort of looking forward to it. I have a little nostalgia going on. Obviously, I covered Roy Jones and Mike Tyson, many of their fights. I know both guys. They both are obviously all-time great fighters. But I also go into it with eyes open. I understand that it isn't going to be what it may have been when they actually discussed this as a real fight in around 2003. Roy Jones had defeated John Ruiz for the WBA heavyweight title. Tyson was still an active fighter. He had lost to Lennox Lewis but was still carrying on with his career. And there was a lot of discussion at the time that he might fight Roy Jones. And at that time, it would have been a mega pay-per-view fight. Obviously, this is not that. But, you know, as a fan of both of their careers and as a boxing fan and with not a lot of other big stuff going on, at least this weekend, I am interested. And in the interest of full disclosure also, you know, I did get hired by the folks at fight.com, which handles the digital distribution of this fight. If you want to buy a stream of the fight in the United States, they're the ones doing it. So we're doing a roundtable discussion, sort of a preview show on Friday following the weigh-in. But I was interested in the fight even before they decided to give me a check to talk about the fight. So I am interested. And I think, you know, as long as you go into it with the right attitude, like you said, Chris, and you're not expecting, you know, this all-time legendary battle for pound-for-pound supremacy or for a heavyweight championship, and you take it for what it is, you combine it with, you know, a pretty decent undercard, and you should just enjoy yourself and kick back and watch the fight if that's what you want to do.
All right, but before we peel back the layers of this fight, or of the card itself, I guess. Why do you think that Mike Tyson is doing this? Like, Roy Jones, I somewhat get. I mean, Roy Jones was putting himself in harm's way as recently as February of 2018. It doesn't surprise me that Roy Jones is doing this. It does surprise me that Mike Tyson is doing this, because Mike Tyson is not in the same position he was back in 2006 when he had a horrifyingly goofy exhibition against Corey Sanders. He has become a successful podcaster. He is financially solvent, which he wasn't back in 2006. Why do you think Tyson's doing this?
I think it's a combination of things. I think part of it is, and this cannot be understated, it is financial. The folks that are bankrolling this at Triller.com, they supposedly put up $28 million to secure the rights of this event. And even if Mike is making good money doing his various projects, that's still a lot of money. A lot of it will go to him. You know, when I spoke to Roy Jones a few days ago for a story that I will write for the Ring Magazine's website, you know, Roy, not in a spiteful way or in a bitter way, he basically lamented the fact that he's only getting a guarantee of $1 million for this fight, which pales compared to what Tyson is going to get. And frankly, what it would have been worth should it have happened, you know, many years ago when they were both still, you know, hot, top, you know, well-known professionals still in their active careers. But Roy's point of view was when this was brought to him, it was when everybody was on a lockdown. There was nothing on sports-wise on television. He thought it sounded like a good idea. He's been, you know, active in terms of in the gym, training other fighters and keeping himself in shape. So he just thought it was something to do. Then they moved it back for different reasons. And he stuck with it. So he's not thrilled with the financial aspect of it. But for Tyson, you ask what the reasons are he's doing. I think financially is a big part of it. But I also think it's a chance for Tyson to, you know, he's got himself in a better frame of mind and a better mindset in his regular life. He's got himself in better shape. And, you know, I think that Tyson knows how badly things ended in his pro career. And he has an opportunity to go back in the ring. It's not a real fight in that sense, but to show people that, you know, at age 54-ish or whatever he is now, that, you know, he still can perform at an athletic level and have some fun, bring some entertainment to his legions of fans, and then put on an event. It's kind of something to do.
It is true that this would have been a mega event back in 2003 when, as you said, Roy beat John Ruiz. Tyson was still around at a reasonably high level. That would have been a monster pay-per-view bonanza. I'm trying to figure out, Dan, what kind of business this pay-per-view is going to do. Because beyond the fight itself, it's in a tough place, right? Like, November 28th is not a great pay-per-view date. You're coming off of Thanksgiving. People spend a lot of their money on Black Friday. You're going into the holidays. Maybe on top of that, there are some people that are thinking, all right, I'm a real boxing fan. I'm going to buy Errol Spence versus Danny Garcia a week later. At the same time, as far as name recognition goes, these two guys have more name recognition than 95% of the active fighters that are out there.
Probably 99% of the active fighters out there.
But what do you think that, what kind of business are you expecting for, I believe, the retail price of around $50? What kind of business are you expecting?
Is the retail price. And, you know, it is available on the Fight app. It's also available on normal pay-per-view. So it's there are various places to buy it on your satellite service. So it is there. The thing is, you mentioned that it's because it's a Saturday following Thanksgiving. That's a great date for television viewing, not necessarily for pay-per-view. So if you take a look in the you know, years of HBO boxing, you know, which has now been gone for the last couple of years, but they often did a major fight on the Thanksgiving Saturday, with the promoters understanding that they would sacrifice the live gate because it didn't turn out a lot of ticket buyers on the holiday weekend. But there was people in their living rooms who had been through the family thing for the last couple of days, and, you know, they finally were starting to unwind with all the holiday spirit, if you will. And so come Saturday night, they put on the boxing match, and those shows consistently did high ratings. Pay-per-view has never really done big numbers on the holiday weekend. I remember many years ago, early in my boxing writing career, the Top Rank put on the rematch between Marco Antonio Barrera and Eric Morales on Thanksgiving weekend, which was a very, very hot fight at that time. Obviously, it was a couple years removed from their, you know, epic first fight. It was a highly anticipated match. you know, between two top guys, world title at stake, and a good pay-per-view with HBO backing it up, you know, with a tremendous marketing for the event. And, you know, if you ask Bob Arum to this day, he'll tell you, you know, we left a lot of money on the table by doing it on the Thanksgiving weekend. And to my recollection, he's never done another pay-per-view on the holiday weekend since then for that reason. So I think they're in for a tough situation because pay-per-view as an entity overall, boxing or otherwise, is not what it once was. And, you know, if I can be frank, the promotion for this has been pretty lackluster. They never hired a boxing person to handle any PR. So it's been, and I know everybody in this business, it has been almost impossible to get information from these people about the event, to set up interviews. Like, I didn't even know who to go through to talk to Roy Jones. So I'm like, and I usually will follow the protocol during a fight week and just try to, you know, I'll do what I have to do. But to start off with, I'll go through the publicist to set up my interviews and not to go around them. I don't want to cause anybody problems. But there was nobody that I even know to go through. So what did I do? I sent Roy Jones a text. I said, hey, Roy, I'm writing some stuff on your event. You know, can you spare me some time, you know, at your leisure? You know, he texted me back like 5 minutes later. He said, yeah, you know, whatever day it was, like, call me at 11 a.m. Okay, I'll call you at 11 a.m. So I called him at 11 a.m. We had a terrific interview. It's been a very difficult and frustrating endeavor to try to cover this in the proper way, particularly when no one's going to be there. You know, I actually got an email today, one of the first ones I've gotten at all from these people who are handling the promotion, basically saying, you know, we received your inquiry about press credentials, but they haven't decided or they don't know if anybody's going to be allowed in yet. Granted, we're still only a few days away. And I'm like, I have no idea why I got this letter, because I never asked about if I could have a press credential. I had no intention of traveling, you know, from my home in Virginia to Southern California to cover an exhibition fight. So, how it will do, I don't know. The folks at Fight who are involved on the digital end, they say that they're very happy with the early returns that they have seen. You know, they didn't give me exact numbers, but they were pretty chipper when we did our production call for our preview show. So that may be a positive indication. But I don't know about you, Chris, but I haven't seen any commercial spots on my cable system. You know, a lot of times when you do pay-per-views, part of the deals with the on-demand folks is they have to run a certain number of commercial spots. And those commercial spots inevitably would show up, you know, during a sports program on ESPN or a sports program on Fox or something on the local time on the broadcast channels. But, and I watch a lot of news channels and I watch a lot of sports channels. I have not seen not one or two. I've seen zero. I've got no emails from my cable folks, you know, saying you should check this fight out, which I get for other events on a regular basis. So, you know, I don't think it's going to do all that good, to be honest with you. They've really not done a good job with this, in my opinion.
I agree with everything you said. And to take it a step further, and my other walk of life, I'm a basketball writer. Nate Robinson is fighting right on the undercard. I've had zero communication with anybody about Nate Robinson, whether to write or to have him on the Crossover podcast, my sister podcast. As a boxing writer and someone that has a podcast and does a show like this, which also streams on DAZN, zero communication. As far as I know, nobody's reached out to me directly about
that. Are you surprised by that a little bit? I mean,
I'll be honest, Dan, I just figured they'd hire like a Fred Sternberg or somebody that's out there that knows the boxing community to try to at least get them involved. And I don't know. I'm not sure what they're banking on, like word of mouth plus maybe some of the TMZ. Urban community that gets reached through rapper. I don't know. I don't know how they're banking on the selling this fight.
Well, I'll give you, this is one indication of why I don't think it's going to do all that well. Because even up until just a few days ago, myself, who was, you know, and does this every day for 20 years, you know, and is very attuned to how these things are carried and where to buy them and how to view them, I was still a little confused. Is this available on regular pay-per-view? Do I have to buy it on the Fight app? Is it available on some other, you know, when they first started to talk about this, it was going to be on the Triller app, which I don't have and don't really know what it is. And it was only until a few days ago that it became clear to me that it was going to be available on multiple platforms. You could buy it as a regular pay-per-view, which I looked in, and yes, it is there on my cable box when I go and check what's on next Saturday on our pay-per-view channel. Yes, you can buy it on the Fight app. And so, you know, if somebody like myself that's a diehard that does this for a living and even I'm not really clear on how to purchase this or where to see it. How do you think the regular consumer that is not involved in this on a minute by minute basis, who's just, you know, kind of like sort of interested, but has no idea where to find it, how they're going to go about it? So I think they've got some real problems with the general public, who, even if they are interested and are willing to spend the money, are just not sure where to go buy the event. And that's a real serious problem. That's your number one thing is, you, if you want people to buy, you have to tell them where they can buy it.
And look, it's not my problem. I don't really care where the money is coming from, but all the people involved, I hope that money's in escrow somewhere. I hope it's some, because Dan, in addition to the fighters, I mean, Jake Paul is on the undercard. He's going to look to get paid. Nate Robinson ain't doing this for free. Badu Jack is fighting. He's looking to get some money out of all that. In addition to the big ticket guys, Tyson and Jones. Plus, they announced like the broadcast team involved. Like Al Bernstein is a part of it. Jim Gray is a part of it. Michael Buffer is doing the introductions for this. Michael Buffer does not do anything for free. So, like, I just hope everybody gets paid off of this, because I'm not sure where all this money's coming from.
I mean, I think they probably have covered it from that standpoint. I mean, those are all, you know, they are going to have to follow the rules of the commission, at least in terms of the boxers, and that money is going to have to be, you know, in place. They did hire the East Coast promoter, who primarily promotes in a casino in Rhode Island, Jimmy Birchfield, who is very experienced, who's promoted, you know, numerous television cards back in the old Friday Night Fights days on ESPN2. He was one of the regular promoters and did a lot of shows in there. He's the one that's handling, I guess it's his license that they're using, but he's also populated the non-pay-per-view undercard with some of the young fighters that he promotes. So, you know, as the promoter of record, you know, Jimmy is a very experienced promoter in this business and understands about making sure money is there when you write the checks and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not so concerned about that. I'm just thinking, and again, it's not my problem, not your problem, as you just mentioned, that they're going to end up swimming in red ink, I think, when this is all said and done, if you believe the numbers that are supposedly on the table for Mike Tyson. And even for Roy Jones, even at $1 million, which may seem like a you know, a drop in the bucket compared to what Tyson's going to get or what Roy probably should have gotten, you know, the money's there from somebody. I mean, they've got, you know, if you have the event going on demand and you have the caliber of people that you just mentioned who are part of the broadcast, you know, I know they've hired a top-notch production team, producer, director types to handle the event. You know, I expect it's going to look good and hopefully it will come off. And I, you know, my main thing is, if you are a boxing fan and you invest your time and you invest your money, that at least when you turn off the television or your phone or whatever you're watching on, when the night's over, that you don't feel like you got ripped off. And when I bought the Mike Tyson exhibition in 2006 against Corey Sanders, and I buy all the pay-per-views and I know what to expect, if that was the worst thing I ever saw in my life, I was pissed off when I was done with that one. I felt ripped off of my money, you know, and I'm not one that's easily complainable when it comes to pay-per-view, because I understand.
He literally held Corey Sanders up. He held Corey Sanders up once.
And you take your chances. But that one really, really irritated me. That was a disgrace. Hopefully this will be better than that.
Well, I mean, making it doubly difficult is the fact that there won't be any crowd in California. I mean, I could almost understand trying it if you can get a live gate that's seven figures. Not possible because of this pandemic. It just
and they're doing it inside the Staples Center, which, I mean, they did a couple of recent PBC FS shows, and they basically just kind of set off a section of the arena. You won't even probably notice that it's in there because, like you said, it's empty. But they're not going to be any fans. And, you know, here we are on Monday of the, as we tape this, on the week of the fight, where it's on Saturday, and they're sending out notices to members of the media saying they haven't even decided if they're going to allow any press into the building. I mean, it's kind of a train wreck.
Last thought on this, I guess, prediction?
I mean, to me, it could go a million different ways. I don't have any idea what to expect. I have, you know, I've talked to Roy a few times in the buildup to the fight. You know, we talked about he went away to training camp in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania with his trainer for the last few fights, Tommy Ankello, and said I asked him, you know, when you prepare for what is being billed as an exhibition, do you, you know, and it's not pound for pound stat, it's not a world title, it's not some mega championship activity, you know, how do you approach the training camp? And he said, look, same way I always do. That's the way I've been programmed. You just, that's, you take it like a real fight and you prepare yourself whether it's a big mega fighter or a regular fight. So he said he's enjoyed the training camp. You know, he's still been around the gym ever since his last fight, but this is the first time he's ever really gone into the full training to get his mind set, to get his body set. So he seems ready and seems, you know, in a right spot mentally, and, you know, says he's in good physical condition. So, you know, clearly he's the guy that's been in the ring most recently compared to Tyson. You know, and I don't know what to make of Tyson, because all we've really seen, and I don't care if you're just if you're a boxing, you know, insider, or you're just somebody that's watching clips on social media, what have we seen of Iron Mike Tyson? We've seen a handful of 30-second clips. That's it. So they're doing two-minute rounds, and Roy Jones believes that he'll be, if he makes it through the first couple of rounds, he'll be completely gassed after two or three rounds. And he said, that's when I'm taking over the fight. So, you know, I'm not making it. Since they're not rendering a real decision, I'm not rendering a real prediction.
I'll be gassed after two rounds. This is okay. All right. Fair enough. No prediction.
What's your prediction, mister?
I have no prediction. I have both guys pass out from exhaustion after six. That's what I'm going with. All right. And we all go home, and the people that spend $50 are angry afterward. I'm predicting anger on social media, Dan. Anger on social media afterwards. That's what I'm predicting right now. All right, let's talk about a couple of real fights.
I'm wearing my Tyson hat.
You are, back in Tyson's last big fight, or at least mega fight. Let's talk about a couple of bigger fights this weekend, or at least real fights this weekend. Daniel Jacobs, he will fight 168 pounds again on Friday against Gabriel Rosado. That fight will be on DAZN in South Florida, again in front of no fans. Being billed as kind of a grudge match, we all saw the interaction between Jacobs and Rosado last year when Rosado was the standby guy when Jacobs fought Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Chavez ultimately made weight, made the fight, or at least made enough weight that Jacobs would fight him. And Rosado fought in front of an empty venue, actually, ironically, after that fight happened. Dan, I've got to be honest, full disclosure, like, even though I'm calling this fight, I'm not all that excited about this fight. I mean, Rosado is a big talker, but he feels to me like he's well past his prime. And even in his prime, when he fought top guys, he generally didn't win, whether it was Gennady Golovkin, Peter Quillen. I mean, go down the list. These top guys, he wasn't able to beat. Jacobs, I'm not sure what Jacobs gets out of this. I mean, Jacobs has said all along, money, you're right, money, he gets money. But Jacobs has said all along that, you know, to prepare myself for a championship-level fight, I want to fight a full-fledged super middleweight. Well, that's not Gabe Rosado. Gabe Rosado is blowing up to 168 to take this fight. So I don't know what to expect in a fight like this. I have low expectations to say in a fight like this, Dan. What about you?
I have similar feelings about it. I have nothing bad to say about Gabe Rosado. He's an honest fighter. He's a good dude. He's a smart dude. He doesn't really need to box, in my mind, because he's intelligent where he can do other things. I've had conversations that go beyond boxing with him. And I like Gabe. Like I said, he's been a good fighter. And he always gives a great effort. He hasn't been able to get over the hump against the best guys, but no one should question his desire or his heart, you know, or his ring intelligence. He just does not have the skills, particularly at this stage of his career, in my opinion, to hang with somebody like Danny Jacobs. And I'm not saying that to be a jerk or to be a hater or anything. On the contrary, I have massive respect for Rosado, but I just think it's a huge mismatch. They got Jacobs the deal for a huge amount of money to fight Canelo. And part of that deal was he got two comeback fights. One was burned against Chavez Jr. He got another one where he could select this caliber of opponent before he looks for some other activity. And, you know, there is some element of the bad blood. I think some of that, frankly, is contrived, because of what happened where Chavez ended up taking the fight and Rosado ended up fighting, you know, after the main event. Or maybe it was before the main event, but the point was it was certainly in front of a pretty empty.
It was after the main event. It was after the venue was cleared.
Okay.
Because
they had thrown bottles cups and all that business into the ring. So, you know, Jacobs is this is I don't want to insult Gabe and say it's just a tune-up fight, but it's certainly not at the level of the types of fights that Daniel Jacobs has had so many times during his career. And Rosado, again, he'll give a great effort. I just don't know if he can, you know, stand up. And I'm not saying he's going to get stopped necessarily, but just, you know, be able to compete with a top guy like Danny Jacobs, even at the heavier weight. Because like you said, Rosado, when I first, you know, knew of Rosado when he was coming along, he was really fighting at junior middleweight, and he moved up in weight to get the chance to fight, some of the names in the heavier division, in the middleweight division, because no one at 154 would fight the guy either. back at that time, but that's, you know, a number of years ago. So I have low expectations, but sometimes when you have low expectations, if you even get a little bit over what you anticipated, you turn out to be satisfied with the night's fights. Unfortunately, the card as a whole has taken a hit because there's been COVID issues with some of the guys on the card, injuries, et cetera. So, you know, what was a little bit of a more interesting card is lost, I think, three fights at this point with some prospects, and Demetrius Andrade's fight dropped out. So they're down to, you know, lesser and lesser fights at this point. So kind of just like hope nothing else goes wrong between now and the time they get in the ring.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the reasons I have low expectations is that, you know, after the bedlam broke out in Phoenix and the venue emptied, I went back and watched Gabe fight. Was it Humberto Ochoa, who is basically a proverbial cab driver. And look, Rosado blew him out, but this guy didn't look like he was in any kind of shape, Dan. I'm sitting there watching. And I'm like, Gabe's got to knock this guy out, right? Like, he's got to stop him. And it wasn't all that impressive. I just don't see Rosado at this stage of his career being able to do much. I think the question's going to be, can Jacobs do what, you know, Golovkin was able to do, Quillen on cuts was able to do? Can he stop him? Because I think Jacobs needs that. I think he needs a springboard type of fight to put him in the mix for the fight that he wants, which is Billy Joe Saunders. I mean, he wants to fight Billy Joe Saunders in the first quarter of 2021. That's certainly a makeable fight because of the Matchroom connection, DAZN, all that. But to get that fight, I think he has to look really impressive against Rosado. So that's probably the biggest thing I'm watching for. Not if Jacobs is going to win. I think that's the case. But will he look impressive in this fight?
Well, I mean, Jacobs, you know, I thought he looked pretty good against Chavez, who was much bigger, and he made him quit and, you know, was kind of winning, you know, fairly easily up until that point. So, you know, look, he doesn't have to be impressive. He has to win the fight, obviously. He has to make sure he wins the fight. The impressive part, you know, we can debate about that after the fact, but make sure you get the W. And, you know,
but it matters, though, Dan, right? Like, I mean, Devin Haney, same situation a few weeks back, you know, won, but
I understand that. But again, Devin Haney, I thought, got a lot of grief that was unwarranted in the way he performed against Gamboa. You know, was it scintillating? Was it explosive? No, but for all the people that said, oh, Devin Haney can't punch, or he's not an offensive-minded fighter, or he, you know, was exposed. Yeah, okay, so he didn't look spectacular in that fight. But does anybody remember that not that long before that, he scored the knockout of the year against Antonio Moran? So there's a happy medium. There's the explosive power where you absolutely erase a guy with one shot. And then there is when you go the distance with, you know, a very cagey and experienced professional like Gamboa. So, you know, to me, there is a happy medium. You're not what you are on your best night, and you're probably not what you are on your worst night. You're usually somewhere in between. So I suspect that Jacobs will get the job done. He'll look pretty good doing it. And then there'll be the discussion. Is he going to get a Saunders? Will he go to do something with the PBC folks and one of those types of fights that will be available to him? You know, Keith Connolly, who's his manager, you know, had this set up very well. It was a three-fight deal, by my understanding. He got Canelo. Now he's got Chavez. Now he's got this fight coming up. And then he's free and clear of any of those entanglements. And he'll be a free agent. And then Keith can go about trying to make the best deal possible for him. But if Billy Joe Saunders is the winner of the fight against Martin Murray coming up, that would be an attractive fight, all things considered. Jacobs against Saunders is a fight where, you know, I don't know who wins the fight. And I don't think anybody really knows for sure who wins the fight. And, you know, even if you don't think that Saunders is the most exciting guy, at least you go into the match having to watch because you're not really sure what's going to happen. I'm pretty sure I know what's going to happen this weekend with Jacobs.
Yeah, you know, shout out Keith Conley. I warned him recently that on last December, he was standing in the ring with one of the ring cards batting beers away. They were getting tossed at Daniel Jacobs. I said, if this fight is a dud, he's going to have beers thrown at him. They're going to be coming from me because I'll be the one in the arena firing exactly. Full beers at him from afar. Like, that's – I want this fight. Look, I think there is – you're right. You're probably right. There could be some contriveness to the bad blood there. But I think there is some animosity between these two guys. And I just – I hope it manifests itself in a good battle. I don't want holding and kind of like a glorified sparring session that ends.
I mean, I don't think it's going to be like that because that's just not the kind of fight that Gabe Rosado – gets in. Gabe is usually in a pretty high contact fight. And Jacobs, while he's got skills, you know, he's not afraid to get in there and rumble and mix it up to a degree. He did it with Golovkin and took the shots pretty well. Not as much maybe with Canelo. That was a high level boxing match. It may not have been the most exciting, but it had its moments where it was exciting. You know, Jacobs, you know, he has scored knockouts And he has, you know, gone the distance, but most of his fights in his entire career have been by knockout. So, you know, this should be the opportunity for him to let the punches flow, and we'll see if he can get the stoppage.
All right, the other fight this weekend is on Saturday, and that's the heavyweight matchup over in the UK between Daniel Dubois and Joe Joyce. And I'm really excited about this fight, Dan, because I like it when you've got these crossroad types of matchups where you've got two fighters, you know, effectively ranked top 10 in the heavyweight division, and the winner, you know, takes a big step forward. They're facing each other, taking a risk. They're doing it without crowds. It feels like to me a lot like Dillian White, Alexander Povetkin from a few months ago. Just a meaningful heavyweight fight. Dubois I like a lot. I think he's incredibly skilled. He's got all the tools, I think, to be a great heavyweight. I'm just not sold on Joyce yet. Like, I watched him at the Olympics. I was down in Rio working for NBC down there, and he's just lumbering a little bit. He's got power. There's no question about that. But there's not like any speed to him. And I look at this matchup thinking that Dubois, if he's on his game, is going to be too fast for Joyce, and maybe even fast enough to catch him and stop him.
I knew you were going to use the word lumbering because it's like the only word you can use for Joyce. You're exactly right in your analysis. I agree with you 100%. Dubois has got the power, he's got the youth, and he's got the speed, and he's got great size also. But Joyce also has good size. He may be slow, very slow, but he can also punch, and he seems like he's got a very good chin. And it's a fight with a lot of high stakes. The one place where I will quibble with you a little bit, as you said, two like top 10 guys, you know, going at each other. To me, the way I look at the matchup, the winner gets to put himself into the top 10. I don't think they're necessarily there just yet. Dubois has not fought anybody. And while Joyce has fought, you know, better competition than Dubois, I still don't think he's necessarily at the top 10 level yet. But certainly the winner, you know, especially if it's by, you know, a definitive result, either by decision or even by a knockout, you know, will launch himself into that top 10 where they have to be considered at that point, you know, for some of the bigger fights, possibly for some kind of title opportunity, a title eliminator, something along those lines. But, you know, if you're a boxing fan, it's the best fight of the weekend. It's what you want to see where you don't necessarily know the result, but you think you're going to see an interesting fight between two guys can get in there and crack, you know. And this is a fight that's been a long time coming. They were supposed to fight in April. Obviously, it didn't happen because of the coronavirus. Everything got shut down. And rather than reschedule it immediately, they both got tune-up fights in the summer, and they both scored pretty quick knockouts against guys that didn't really have a prayer. They finally agreed to do this fight. And, you know, I'm totally psyched for it. I mean, this is going to be a good matchup. I don't see how if you're mildly interested in heavyweight boxing, how you're not going to be checking this out on Saturday.
So, I mean, I guess I always ask fighters this, whether it's, you know, in at scrums or in fighter meetings for broadcasts, like, how do you win? Like, Joyce, I can see past a victory for Dubois. Like, does Joyce just have to catch him with that one big shot? Because he, like you said it, I said it, like, he can crack. Like, he'll hit you with some solid punches. But is that his path to victory, just catching him? Because I don't see him being able to outbox Dubois in this matchup.
I think, I mean, certainly that's one way he can win. But I think the other way that Joe can possibly win the fight is, as long if you can prove that you can take what Dubois has to offer. You know, Daniel has never really been in a tough, deep, grinding type of fight that's gone. You know, I don't know off the top of my head the number of rounds, but, you know, I don't think he's ever gone 12 rounds. It's the type of fight where if you're Joe Joyce and you prove that you've got that good chin, and you're going to, even if you're slow, you're going to land some kind of punch. It's not like Dubois is a Mr. Defense. He does get hit. I've seen him hit by lesser opponents. I mean, he stood up to them, for, you know, thankfully for his sake. But Joyce is going to have to take some, make Dubois question himself a little bit. And Joe's going to have to, in my mind, if he doesn't get him out of there with, you know, some crazy early punch, he's going to have to get him into the late rounds and tire him out a little bit, put that big body on top of Dubois. Because even though Dubois is like, you know, 6'4", 240, you know, Joyce is even bigger than that. So You lean on him, you tire him out, you touch anywhere you can on his shoulders, on his body, on his arms, and just beat on him as much as possible. By the time you get into like, you know, 9, 10, 11, and he's huffing and puffing, you may have a chance to land a good shot, because even in the early rounds, you know, Joe can still punch a bit. You're going to have to tire him out a little bit, slow him down, you know, because as we mentioned, he's definitely the faster fighter. You know, make Dubois lose some of the confidence that he has going into the fight. But ultimately, you know, I think that he's the better athlete, Dubois. He's probably one punch the bigger puncher, and he's got just a seems to me a more diverse arsenal, that he can do more things different than Joe can. But what Joe can do can be very effective in the heavyweight division. If you're big and you're strong and you can take a shot, you can go really far.
Yeah, Dubois had the obligatory Kevin Johnson heavyweight experience that took him 10 rounds. But since then, or before and after, he's really only been a 5-round fighter or less. So you're right. I mean, maybe the later rounds are where Joe Joyce can start to do some damage. But it's a good fight. And you're right. Even if it's not two top 10 guys, I think the winner does take a jump into that top 10 and gets, or at least positions himself for a much more meaningful fight in 2021. Let me finish with this, Dan. You had a chance to catch up with Bob Arum this week. It was just a couple weeks ago that Bob Arum, you know, effectively napalmed his own fighter, saying that, look, I'm tired of losing money on Terrence Crawford. I could buy a house in Beverly Hills with the money I've lost on Terrence Crawford, saying this to The Athletic. You had a conversation with him recently, and rather than mellowing out, it seems like Bob has decided to double down. What was your takeaways from that conversation with Bob Arum about Terrence Crawford?
Bob basically was like, look, Terrence Crawford is a tremendous fighter, but just being really good, if you don't generate money, it doesn't do me or, you know, my company any good. And he basically said, I'm washing my hands of Terrence Crawford. Not that they're going to go release him or cut him. They still have time left on their contract through October of 2021 with Crawford. But he, in essence, said, I'm done dealing with Terrence Crawford. I'm turning it over to Todd DeBuff, which is Bob's stepson, who also is the president of Top Rank, as you know, and let him handle the headache that Bob believes that Terrence Crawford is. But what Bob was really irritated by was that what he believes was on the Crawford camp side of leaking details of the contract to the media, which really got Bob steamed up about when his contract was up. You know, some language in there about making an offer for an Errol Spence fight this year. Otherwise, it would require a seven-figure payment, $1 million to Terrence Crawford. And Bob really took that in a bad way. He was still really ticked off because of the fact that even after they had made an agreement, both sides had agreed to the terms on the fight between Crawford and Kell Brook that took place a couple of weeks ago, that the Crawford camp and Terrence in particular did not sign the contract after they'd had it for 2 weeks. The whole idea was, we've agreed on the terms, let's get it signed and we'll make a big deal about it. We'll announce it during the broadcast for the Teofimo Lopez-Vasily Lomachenko fight, which had a huge audience, and we can really kickstart this promotion with videos and an interview and graphics and conversation. And for whatever reason, Crawford did not sign the contract. You know, Arum's point of view was, look, I know what they're doing. This is Bob's, this is not my opinion. This is Bob's opinion, saying they say they agree on the deal. We start the promotion, and then when it's announced, then they start to renegotiate the terms because they weren't thrilled with them. I'm not playing those games. Sign, you know, we made a deal, sign the contract, and we'll blow this thing out. And so they kept dragging their heels, not signing. And finally, a photo of the signature sheet was transmitted to them during the Lomachenko Lopez broadcast. But by that time, they didn't have the opportunity to roll in a big video splash to do an on-camera interview from maybe a satellite location for Crawford and to make a big deal about it. So if you watch back the broadcast for Loma and Lopez, yes, when he finally signed and the broadcast team got word of it, all you heard was, you know, 30 seconds of a mention of it by Joe Tessitore on the telecast, which, you know, it was good that they were able to make it known that it was happening, but that certainly is not the same as blowing it up the way that they wanted to. So Bob was upset about that. He was upset about the contract details being leaked out, and he's upset because he claims that he's lost a huge amount of money on Crawford over these last several fights, and, you know, he's just done with that. And if you think that the Errol Spence fight's going to happen, he went through in the piece you referenced, which is on Boxing Scene, he went through, you know, the math of why this fight is so difficult to make, and he went through it in a very methodical manner. And from the point of view of that, you know, you can disagree with somebody's opinion, but it's hard to disagree with basic math. 2 + 2 = 4, at least in my world. And so Bob was making the point as he went through these numbers of why that's a very difficult fight to make. And that, you know, reiterated that Crawford, you know, needs to do a better job of putting himself out there, that Bob's company has put resources and time and effort into promoting him. But if the boxer is unwilling to do it for himself, you know, you can't make the athlete want it more than you do.
And so he said,
he doubled down, but he did not back off. He said, I'm serious when I said that. He said that he absolutely meant what he said, and he stands by it.
So how does this end? Because even if there wasn't this friction between Terrence Crawford and Top Rank, I have no reason to believe that we'll see Spence and Crawford in early 2021. They're both out there saying 60-40 my way. You know, that's a problem. You've had Errol Spence.
That's a non-starter. That's just a non-starter. That's
right. But you've also had Errol Spence in the build-up to his fight against Danny Garcia talk about how, well, the networks don't really see it as being worth the cross promotion right now. You're not getting any kind of smoke signals from either side that this fight is going to take place. So what do you do if you're Top Rank with Terrence Crawford? Like, maybe down the line, there's a Patrick Teixeira fight at 154, but Teixeira has a tough fight of his own that he's got to deal with before he can become available. First half of 2021, what does Terrence Crawford do?
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, Teixeira possibility to move up one weight class to 154 to try to, you know, make something out of getting a belt in another weight division, you know, would be, you know, something that's interesting. But like you said, he's got a tough fight against Castaño, and that fight's in February. So even if that fight with Teixeira and Castaño happens as scheduled, I believe it's February the 6th on DAZN, that it would still be a few more months until the winner of that fight could be ready to fight against Terrence Crawford, which would push Crawford, you know, at the earliest into the spring, which is still.
And by the way, Dan, Teixeira always takes a beating. So it's like, no matter win or lose, he always takes a beating. So he's never going to be able to fight till.
Yeah, I mean, summer. As far as who Crawford fights, I mean, if it's not that fight, you know, unless they can somehow convince a Porter or even an Ugas or somebody, there just is not that person that's a 147-pound contender under Top Rank's promotion. They have a tremendous amount of fighters in the 140-pound weight class, but those are not ready. Those guys are not ready to go up yet to do a fight with Crawford. They're still trying to get done, say, for example, for the undisputed title, a Josh Taylor fight against Jose Ramirez. The winner of that fight, you know, could be a potential opponent for Terrence down the road. But again, it's not going to be in the spring. So they're going to have to really get creative and try to figure a way out. And, you know, I thought Aaron made a very intelligent point when he talked about, you know, if Terrence Crawford is with PBC and suddenly thinks it's going to be so much easier to make a fight with one of these big guys, Spence in particular, you know, he might have another thing coming. And Bob made the point that, you know, Al Haymon is very aware that when they worked on the Wilder and Fury rematch together, that in the United States, one third of roughly 900,000, 850,000 pay-per-views came from the fight being available on ESPN+, where Top Rank has the exclusive. If Crawford's not with Top Rank, then Haymon can't have ESPN+ as one of those platforms to sell the pay-per-view, which is still doable. But the point that Bob also made is that he didn't think that Al would want to take that risk all on his own, that at least if Crawford's with Top Rank and they make that match, they have risk for Crawford, they have risk on the other side for Spence, and you can, you know, sort of ease the possible losses on both sides. Because here's the frank bottom line. You and I want to see the fight. Diehard fans want to see the fight. It is my professional opinion that fight on a great day, even with the backing of pay-per-view from ESPN and from Fox, on a great day, that fight still doesn't exceed a half a million buys. And with the amount of money that the two athletes want and frankly probably deserve, but you get what you negotiate, not what you deserve. When you can't do a fight with a full crowd and you can't do a fight with the full closed circuit, which Bob made the point of, also ran through the numbers about bars and restaurants accounting for as much as maybe $5 million on a fight like this. You put that fight at a place like the MGM with a full complement of spectators, probably does a gate of around $7 million. You can't suddenly take away, you know, $10, $11 million from the bottom line and still be able to pay these guys at the number of pay-per-views that you think it's going to do. So again, this is not part of what Bob said to me was emotional. I can't handle this. You know, I'm done with them, blah, blah, blah. But part of it was just cold, hard math. And math rules the day when you make a business deal.
Yeah, I mean, we really got to get out of the business. At least pay-per-views got to get out of the business of guarantees. I mean, fighters should get what they earn.
Bob's final point, and this is very significant. Many of the biggest pay-per-views that have ever been done in the history of boxing were situations where the promoters or the promoter, the fighters were made an offer of a modest guarantee, millions of dollars, you know, a good amount of money. But they took that money and they worked for the rest. And it was basically, and Bob suggested, let's get back to the way we did it. The two boxers, Spence can get a good guarantee from his side. We'll make Crawford a good guarantee on our side and we'll split the promotion. And then you do the deal with the boxer, usually like an 80-20 or even Bob suggested possibly a 90-10 split in favor of the fighter. So when you, all the revenue is counted up and you take the net the boxer gets his guarantee plus his percentage, and the promoter gets his percentage, and that's the way you make a big fight. You don't guarantee astronomical numbers not knowing if you can get there. You know, if Top Rank's willing to take the risk, or PBC's willing to take the risk, they believe that the boxer should take a quality guarantee, but work for the rest. Do the interviews. Make your name. Go on the talk shows. You know, do all the radio shows. Do all the podcasts. And really get out there and sell the fight. And that's the reason why, say whatever you want about people like Floyd Mayweather, when it came to promoting a fight, or Oscar De La Hoya, or even, you know, Canelo, or a Mike Tyson, or Oscar De La Hoya, you know, Manny Pacquiao, those guys did their work. Mayweather in particular, he did everything. And that's why he made, almost $1 billion as a boxer, because he knew how to promote the fight.
Yeah, you really got to get back to that model where, if you can sell a fight, you reap the rewards. If you can't sell a fight, it shouldn't be on somebody else to pick up the tab on there.
The guys aren't going to get paid. I mean, they're still going to get millions of dollars in guaranteed money. But instead of getting a $10 million type guarantee that they might ask for, you know, maybe they get 4 or 5 and work for the rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Dan, always appreciate your time, man. I'll tell you this. I will watch your show after the weigh-in on Friday. I will not watch the fight itself. I'm going to make paper airplanes out of $1 bills and throw them out my window, and I'm going to guess I'd be more entertained.
Well, you can follow me on Twitter for the updates. How about that?
@DanRadio1. There you go. Dan, appreciate it, my friend.
You bet, my man. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, Daniel Jacobs is here, the former middleweight champion, now campaigning at 168 pounds. His next fight, end of the month, Gabriel Rosado. A bit of a grudge match between Jacobs and Rosado, two guys that have exchanged a bit of a war of words over the last year or so, and Danny joins me here on the show. Danny, how are you, man?
I'm doing lovely. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So before we get into the Jacobs fight specifically, I always ask guys this, you know, that are coming onto their first fight, you know, sort of post-pandemic. I mean, how has this affected, you know, training for fights, just your overall schedule? I mean, what changes have you had to make because of the way the world changed?
Well, I think for me, it was more so just where is location going to be, because you can't go outside. So as far as training goes, I've tried my best with myself because my trainer hasn't been here up until, you know, a couple months ago, or like 2 months ago. I just had to make a nest for myself home and, you know, make a little bubble within my own home. And that's what I've done. You know, I made a little gym. I made a training facility to where I can train during the pandemic. And obviously things are a little bit better, so we're able to go out to gyms. So that's a good thing. I miss the gyms. I miss my comfort zone. I miss being in that, you know, the environment. So I'm really excited just to be back and fighting in front of fans or no fans. For me, I'm looking forward to getting back to the gym because boxing is what I love.
How has the conditioning been? I mean, making weight, I mean, it's presumably a little easier for you at 168 than it was at 160, but you know, you're a big framed guy. How has the conditioning been?
It's been great. I don't eat too much. Obviously I'm still, you know, when you're during the pandemic, you have to kind of, you know, take it easy. And I haven't had trouble with that. I've kind of curbed my appetite a lot during this whole pandemic. I've been able to eat comfortably, but at the same time, not knowing that I have to kill myself in camp. So that gives me great comfort. And I've been starting camp now for about a month now. So my training has increased and my diet, you know, has changed a little bit more, but I'm still able to eat a lot. I'm still able to be comfortable and not have those worries that I had at the middleweight division.
So you moved up from middleweight last year and you move up to face Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., who somewhat predictably doesn't make the super middleweight limit. You know, you have to fight a guy that's, you know, even bigger than a super middleweight that you were used to. I mean, with all that being said, how did you find your first experience as 168-ish pounder?
It was pretty interesting. It was something that I thought would allow me to get acclimated to, you know, the super middleweight division, but it was more pressure. It was more weight. It was more than I anticipated, but I was able to succumb and I was able to overachieve. And for me, I thought breaking down his walls, that's where he knew exactly who he was in there with. I think for me, it was like outstanding first time at the super middleweight division. But for me, the second time around is really just getting this grudge match out. Obviously, everybody hasn't had the same training during this pandemic. So I just think it's the perfect fight, and I'm looking forward to it.
Did you feel like you're, I mean, how did you feel power-wise, speed-wise, all the things that you were as a middleweight, did you feel they carried up into the super middleweight division?
Oh, 100%. Because now I'm able to be comfortable. Now I'm able to really sit down on my punches and not feel weak. You know, weakness comes in your legs. Weakness comes when you're losing too much weight. You don't have a lot of water around your brain when you get hit. It's extra oomph. Like, it's a lot of things that people don't know when you're losing too much weight and you're going there not 100%. So now that I feel like my last fight, it showed exactly where I was comfort-wise. You were able to see the power. You were able to see the movement. You were able to see me at my comfort level. And now that I've been training in that comfort level, you'll be able to see more because we're going to add a little bit more things to the repertoire. So I'm excited.
It was certainly a surreal night, given that, you know, I conducted the post-fight interview with you while avoiding beer cans. You got your manager Keith Conley with a ring card, like whacking away beers as they're being flung at you, like you did anything wrong. Like they're getting fired at you in the ring.
No, it was very interesting, but to me it was a fun experience, and those are things that you can go at the end of your career and say, wow, I've had a tremendous career, and it was crazy, it was good, it was fun, it was bad, but it was definitely a career.
So what's your training team look like at this point? Are you still working with Fareed for this next fight?
Yeah, so it's solely just me and Fareed. We've been able to grow and spend time with each other, and I think it's perfect for me because now I have a trainer to really focus on my skill sets, what I'm good at. You know, he's not training me like every other fighter that he has. He's specifically molding me to be the best version that I can be. And now that I'm comfortable at my weight, I just think that it's perfect now because, you know, I have the perfect teacher. I have the perfect scenario where I don't have to kill myself and I get to be 100%. So it's just perfect. You know, he's at my home every day. We go to the gym every day. He runs with me. He's very active. Like, you know, and even between camp, he checks on me. He's making sure during this whole pandemic that I was doing the things that I had to do to at least stay, you know, in decent shape. So it was great.
You know, a lot of times, Danny, when guys change trainers, they don't really necessarily look for someone to teach them things. Like, you know, you're an accomplished guy. You've won a world championship. You've been a top-level middleweight. What were you looking for in a trainer? Did you want to learn new things, or did you want someone that was more a strategist that can kind of guide you in the course of a fight?
All of those things. I feel like I was looking for a trainer who was dedicated to me, specifically me and my skill sets, what can make me better, you know, just really make it all about me. And I wanted to have an interaction with my trainer where I really feel like he gets me, and that communication and throughout the camps that we had, the two camps and this camp now, our third camp together, it's just been, you know, a growing relationship. A growing in terms of me learning and growing in terms of us understanding each other and the communication. I think when you have a good camp in terms of good energy and, you know, good training, good techniques, it just makes for an overall good experience. And I'm grateful for that.
So you get Rosado on November 27th. That fight's going to be on DAZN. And, you know, there's this good trash talk. And then there's something you said to him after Chavez missed weight that was caught by the matchroom cameras.
That's easy money.
That's easy, you know, money for you.
I do want to thank you, though. You know why I want to thank you? Because if you wasn't the replacement, I wouldn't have got that extra M in the bank.
Oh, word.
For leverage. So you
okay.
The man, bro.
Okay, okay.
Good luck tomorrow.
Okay. Just let me handle your business, though, dog.
But you corny, though. You corny.
You would never step in the foot. You would never step foot in the ring room. You are?
You lucky.
Because you don't deserve to step foot in the ring.
Really? 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 And what makes you think that?
That was cold, man. That was like a dagger right there. Like, thanks for being here, man. I got rich right, just because right. You're standing right there.
Yeah, no, it was a very, very funny situation. But it's a war zone, and this is boxing. And, you know, you don't really have any friends in there where you need to kind of, you know, watch what you say. Or, you know, to me, it's like a kill-to-be-killed sport inside and out the ring. And if you have some foul words to say about me, I'm going to reciprocate that. And that's just the way it goes. You know what I'm saying? I'm just a fighter out here trying to make the best career for myself. You know, I'm also trying to set a path for young up and coming fighters to do things the right way, to make sure that they manage the right way, to make sure that they move in the right way and have other opportunities outside of boxing. So that's what I represent. And I think that that was kind of misconstrued to, you know, certain people who voiced their opinion about it, but that's just what I represent. And that's what I'm going to continue to stand for. So
there was a great line. It was a great line. I applaud that line specifically. We've seen Rosado kind of do this before, sort of talk his way into fights. He's no stranger to trash talk. I mean, when you were going through the decision-making process of what you wanted to do next, did the trash talk kind of linger with you? Was that something that pushed you in that direction?
I think it was really more so the fact that I really wanted to be in a position to where I can get someone who has said some negative things about me who didn't really sit in a good place. And, you know, I have fans, I have family, I have several people who, you know, watch these things. So, you know, my reputation is on the line. And to have someone say some really bad things about me, yeah, I think it's personal. So that lingers in my mind. But at the same time, you know, I think it's going to be a good scrap for however long it lasts. I do think it's going to be an entertaining fight because he has heart. One thing that he may not have all the talent in the world, but he has heart. And to me, sometimes that serves as a good fight. And for me, you know, coming into the super middleweight division, I think it's the perfect second fight.
Yeah, and that was my next question because, you know, one thing you said to me, and it stuck with me about, you know, the fights you wanted before the world championship fights was you wanted to fight, you know, get used to fighting legit super middleweights. You mean Chavez turned out to be like a cruiserweight. And Rosado, look, he'll weigh, you know, close to 168, but I think we both would agree he's not really a super middleweight. He's kind of a blown up, you know, 160 pounder. I mean, do you feel like he's going to be able to physically get you ready for, I mean, to borrow a phrase, the wars to come, you know, in fights down the line?
I mean, he's a really big guy. I don't know if you really, been side by side by Gabe, but he can get pretty big. And I've seen him in camp putting on a little bit of muscle and, you know, trying to flex and look all cool, but it's really all about the skill. So as long as he has that weight and he comes in 168 pounds, I think it'll be perfect for me. You can call me a blown up, you know, super middleweight as well. You know,
no, you are slimmed down middleweight. you are cutting. You are not a blown up anything at that point. It was, you had to cut off a leg sometimes, dude, to get down to 160. Right.
No, actually, it's been kind of easy for me to make 168. A little bit more easy than it has, obviously, for 160. But I realized that I come in like 65, you know, and, you know, 64.5. So to me, it's like I still can make 160, but it's a stretch. It's those extra 5 pounds that really take a toll on me. So I feel comfortable at 68, but I'm still feeling out.
That's got to be a good feeling.
You know, what was cool for me was that I really get to put on more muscle now. You know, I get to put more muscle in my legs now and sit down on my punches. So not only will you get that speed of athleticism from me being comfortable and not drained, but you also get the strength and you'll be able to see some really hard shots and power and, you know, combination punches and bunches, kind of like what you used to see when I was coming up in the, you know, professional ranks.
It's got to be a good feeling to not have to starve yourself to get down there the day before and be, you know, go into that fight. It's got to be
a tremendous feeling there.
You know, not to look past anybody, but you're a desirable opponent for a lot of guys out there. I mean, as you look across the super middleweight division, you know, what makes sense to you? Is there a championship level grudge match that you're kind of looking at as you get into 2021?
No, I don't have any grudge match that I would say. I think this is the only fight that I can say that kind of personal, but grudge, no. I just want the top spot. You know, I just want to be able to.
Billy Joe Saunders can make it a grudge match. Like, he'll just run his mouth if you want to fix him.
You know, he's good for that. I think, you know, all the fights at 168 pounds, as far as top five, top 10 champions and contenders, I think it all makes sense because even though this fight is not for a title, I'm still a notable, a ranked, and a worthy fighter to fight a champion or a contender. So it's as long as it makes sense. It's really about what the fans want and what my team decides.
You know, you've had some back and forth with Jermall Charlo over the years. He just beat Sergey Derevyanchenko. And one of the things that was said afterwards, well, Charlo beat Derevyanchenko in more clean fashion than Jacobs did and then Golovkin did. What did you think of of Charlo Derevyanchenko, and do you still see Charlo as somebody you'd like to face down the line?
I thought it was a good performance. I don't think it was the best performance. I mean, I thought styles make fights, so his style, he was able to, you know, sit down more, be a little bit more poised, and, you know, stand his ground, whereas I showed a little bit more of my athleticism. I boxed, I switched southpaw, you know, I was able to throw shots slick on the inside. I show a lot of my arsenal in that fight, and I thought it was a perfect performance against a contender, you know, who still could be a world champion. But at that time, you know, we had been sparring partners. You know, he had known my whole style for like the last 4 years, you know. So to me, it was just kind of like still battling a very tough challenge, but battling someone who knows me. So it's kind of different. But to rate his performance, I thought he did good. But, you know, styles make fights. He wouldn't be able to have that same success with me.
What do you think of having Demetrius Andrade on your undercard as the co-main event to the fight?
Like what? What do you mean when I think about it?
I mean, like, it, you know, I know you've known him for a long time. What do you think about having him?
Oh, no, I think it's great. I think it's cool to have, you know, talent on the card. I think it's phenomenal. Anytime you're a headliner, you always, you know, want to give a good show, but you also want the undercard to be good. And I think talent such as Demetrius Andre and any other guys who's on there that's really good, I think it's going to serve just as a great card overall. So I'm excited.
Do you see him as a potential? I mean, I keep asking about potential guys, but I know you guys are friends. You know, Demetrius is theoretically being lined up for Saunders at some point for that 168-pound title. Is friendship more important than, you know, a belt there? Or, like, how do you view, you know, Andre down the line as well?
I mean, he's a middleweight, you know, and unless we're talking super middleweight or something like that, then I won't even entertain it. But for me, I kind of focus on the guys who, you know, are in my direction or in my sight, you know, and I have a lot of options. So to entertain that, I don't know, it would be.
I guess it's more about if he's talking about, like, Saunders would be for Saunders' title, I think, is what Eddie's been saying out loud, like him being a super middleweight champion and having a belt at some point.
If that's the case, then we can talk, because obviously he'll be in sight of, you know, my goals and my dreams and wanting to be a, you know, two weight class champion. So, you know, we'll see how that looks once it presents itself.
Before I let you go, you know, boxing had a great night recently with Teofimo Lopez knocking off Lomachenko. Not only was it a great moment for a 23-year-old Lopez, who dared to be great and stepped in and beat one of the top pound-for-pound guys, but you see the ratings were high, you know, social media interest was high. When you as a fighter see stuff like that, I mean, how does it make you feel? Like, how do you react to moments like we saw Lopez?
I mean, I love it. First off, I want to say congratulations to Lopez. He did a phenomenal job, and, you know, he represented Brooklyn very well. So it was a masterful performance, and, you know, he showed where, you know, he had to mature and, you know, take on the experience in the later rounds, and, you know, he weathered the storm and still remained himself and was strong, and I applaud him, you know. So he definitely showed on for Brooklyn, and we applaud that. But it was a good night for boxing overall. I'm grateful because, you know, boxing is still the best sport in the world, and even during this pandemic, I'm glad that we can give people the best fights that they're asking for and that, you know, that they want to see. You know, this was something that's been brewing for years, so the fact that it could do the justice and give us what we predicted, I'm happy. You know, boxing is living on and is striving. And we have these young guys come in and wanting to make a name for themselves and doing just such. So, you know, it's always going to be the best sport in the world because it's always going to have that talent. And that was to show that, you know, we seen that last weekend.
Yeah, and it showed me, and you kind of made this point, like, boxing is still very much alive and well. It just needs, like, you can't sort of tell people to watch something. You have to show them it's worth ultimately watching. And that event was worth watching. And you're a guy that came up, I mean, you as a middleweight champion fought Golovkin, fought Canelo, like went through those wars. It's and from my vantage point, Danny, it's great to see not just Teofimo, but you got Ryan Garcia, who is, like, you know, still baby-faced at 21 years old, be like, bring them all on. You've got Devin Haney saying, bring them all on. Like, that's the attitude I think boxing needs. And, you know, for whatever reason, hasn't had, you know, in recent years.
I love it. I love the guys' attitude. They're young, they're bold, and they're brash, and they have a lot to prove. But the thing about it is they have the skill to back it up. And that's what I'm so excited about it, because, you know, they're in this new technology, social media wave, but it's like a lot of celebrities that you see who are taking advantage of social media. They don't really deserve it, but these guys deserve all the attention that they're getting because they're superstars and they have, you know, the fan base, they have the interests, and they have this new wave of technology and social media that they have that platform to take advantage of. And I'm super, super proud of them for all those guys taking advantage and being able to, you know, build their platform and show the world their talent. You know, this is boxing. This is a brutal sport, but they're also bringing so many other people into it that necessarily, you know, wouldn't gravitate towards it. So, you know, it's all for boxing. Cheers to it.
Yeah, so many mainstream fans watched that night, and you know, hopefully we get a lot more of them to come in the future. Danny, 11-27, you are back against Gabe Rosado. I'm sure you guys will be very civil to each other in the build-up. They'll be, you know, nice to see you again, Danny. How was your pandemic?
Sure,
you know,
exactly.
All that good stuff. Hopefully you have a good night, and hopefully we see you in even bigger fights in 2021, man. Thanks for joining me.
I appreciate that. Thanks, Chris. Look forward to it.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. My thanks to my guests. As always, subscribe to the podcast over at Apple Podcasts. Rate, review, you know I appreciate it, and I'll see you next week.